Welcome to Insights on the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. Good Thursday morning to you. Straight up 11 o'clock in New York City, where it feels like it's Miami. Nasty. Humidity is off the charts. And we're soon to get the remnants of Michael in the next 5-10 hours. Epic rain, lots of wind. Oh, yeah, all kinds of good stuff. Well, after the deluge the Yankees went through this week, I guess nothing will be a surprise, right? Always love your input. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Have a packed show today. Going to meet producer, writer, and director Doug Rowland. He's working on a new film called Feeling Through. It was a happenstance encounter on a New York City street where he met a deaf-blind man, and that forged a plot for his new movie, Feeling Through. Check it out on feelingthrough.com, feelingthrough.com. And we're going to meet Dr. Susan Noonan. She's created an incredible new book, very, very handy, titled Take Control of Your Depression, Strategies to Help You Feel Better Now. And that's printed by Johns Hopkins Press. And we'll meet them in both just a few minutes. So I was off for a little bit. Busy work schedule. Aside from radio, I was at in Kentucky. I've never been to Kentucky before. Beautiful state. Spoke at a conference, did a keynote, did a breakout session. And some great people at the CAP, Kentucky Association for Private Providers. Just really, you know, when you connect with a lot of people, because they're like-minded, because they're doing the same thing that you're doing. For example, obviously I serve people with disabilities and people without disabilities, but this particular conference was about persons with disabilities because they either lead agencies, facilities, etc. So my message was well-received about overcoming adversity. And of course, for direct service providers, how they can be more appreciated. And how direct service providers who work with people with disabilities can influence the people they do serve, people with disabilities, because, you know, it's so funny because we all kind of judge books by cover sometimes. And that's true across the board. Hopefully you don't act on that. But what's interesting is that when a person has a disability, we also lower our expectations of that person. So I talked about not lowering expectations because the reality is, just because someone has a disability doesn't mean they shouldn't be motivated, empowered. And if they have a disability, your expectation of what they can should not dwindle, should not lessen. So it was a very, very effective conference. A lot of great people, a lot of great connections. Matter of fact, I think I got two speaking gigs out of that conference. And it was kind of neat. I had a few hours before I got to the airport. And the Louisville Slugger Baseball Factory is in Kentucky, right in Louisville. And went there and took the factory tour. Now, as a woodworker, I was freaking out how cool the factory was and the real just basic process of taking a raw piece of timber and carving it into just a beautiful work of art that you can actually play baseball with. So the historical aspect of it was pretty neat, and actually just going through the whole process and as a woodworker, again, appreciating it. I'm not really a baseball fan, but I really appreciate the art, and certainly the game is obviously so Americana. So that was really neat. So, of course, I bought a few bats for my son and daughter. I bought, like, youth versions. And, you know, it's pretty cool is you can get them engraved right there on the spot. So that was neat. So, and I bought my son an adult size bat as well. But they're like works of art. You almost don't want to use them. So I told him, for now, we'll put the nice one, the big one, the adult size one up on the wall. And when you're ready for it, we'll swap out the adult size one for the youth size one and keep that one safe. Also had a great opportunity to speak at the Trenton Disability Pride Parade and Celebration last Friday in the capital of New Jersey, Trenton. And that was fantastic. Carol Tonks is the director, and she heads an organization called the Alliance, ACI, Alliance, oh, geez, I forgot, of Independence, Center of Independence, that's what it's called. And just a day-long celebration honoring those people with disabilities that run the gamut, totally run the gamut. And it's great because, you know, they get up, they sing, dance, they do have bands, poetry readings, just a real chock full of Talented People Day. And you get the Trenton mayor, dignitaries, a lot of people from the Department of Mental Health and Human Services, or Department of Health and Human Services, pardon me. And it was a great turnout. There's a parade first, and then it culminates to an actual celebration. There was a big stage, bands, and saw some really good music. And I was just very, very taken by the professionalism and amount of people in attendance. And different states are coming up with their version of pride parades as well for the disabled population. And I love it. So if you're considering having or creating one in your state, please do. Before we meet our first guest, I want to touch on two very kind of interesting things now. Even if you're not really into sports, there's a great show on HBO called Ballers, starring Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock. And it's basically about a retired football player who's becoming a manager, agent, etc. And but it's really timely because they're dealing with a lot of events that are like right out of the headlines. It's like they could not have timed this any better. So they're really shredding the NCAA about how the NCAA is all about money, does not care about the health and welfare of college players because they're amateurs and they get paid absolutely zilch. And on the heels of that, there's a great new documentary that I believe is on Showtime called Student Athlete. And this dovetails right into the Ballers aspect because of how many players were sidelined due to a very small technicality. It's just amazing how the NCAA gets away with this. So I just wanted to spotlight those two programs, Student Athlete, which is a documentary on Showtime, and Ballers. And then the other thing is Real Sports. Real Sports on HBO. Brian Gumbel, I can't stand watching him, but the people who actually do the stories, the segments, are amazing. So there's a story about strength and conditioning coaches that are vital in football teams and a lot of professional sports, but they focused on football teams because the amount of deaths on the field in the last, oh, I think 5 years, totals around, I think, 38 deaths. That's crazy. Unfathomable. And the unfathomable factor continues because the strength and conditioning coaches only have 13 hours of training. 13 hours, which is absolutely nothing. That's deplorable. So the fact that they have no accountability, they're not an MD, they don't know how to recognize when there's an issue. When someone starts getting leery on the field, tired, they just yell at them more, and I'm sure calling very insulting names to get them, to motivate them to continue. And next thing you know, these guys collapse. Some of them end up dying, etc. And some of these strength and conditioning coaches make in the upwards of $700,000. Can you imagine that for mere certification? Yeah, I mean, I can understand certainly the importance because your athlete, team member is as good as the condition that they're in. And if they're better, the condition they're in, the more their talent will be permissible. The agility factor, speed factor, you name it. So Real Sports is airing right now, and of course you can always do it on demand. But those are great, three great programs I just want to point out to you. Ballers about the NCAA, Student Athlete, and Real Sports about things that are really topical. And I think that you'll find it very interesting. Even if you're not into sports, it's more about how we are not the equal treatment of amateur players. And their health and welfare is kind of, it's sad. Doug Rowan is a writer, director, producer, and we're going to be meeting him after our first guest. But he did a movie called Feeling Through, and it's on available feelingthrough.com, feelingthrough.com. Check that out. It's an incredible story about a blind, deaf individual making his way in the world. But now I'd like to introduce to the show Dr. Susan Noonan. She has written a great new book called Take Control of Your Depression, Strategies to Help You Feel Better Now, and that's printed by Johns Hopkins Press. Dr. Noonan, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and thank you for having me today.
It's my absolute pleasure. So, my first question to you is, you write two words quite often, and I've never seen it so much in a book before about depression, but mood disorder. Is that a phrase you prefer over depression?
No, that's a professional term that includes both depression and bipolar disorder.
Aha.
So it includes both of them, which are related. They're kind of cousins, so to speak.
How easy is it to actually diagnose those cousin factors when they're sometimes very slight?
Yeah, it's not very easy. It takes a professional, and it takes some time because there are so many similarities. There are a number of symptoms that one would have, and you need 5 of 9 different symptoms that appear over at least 2 weeks' time, that include being sad, depressed, or irritable, change in interest or pleasure in activities, sleep changes, appetite changes, weight changes, things like that. And that is for depression and for bipolar depression. Bipolar disorder is characterized by episodes of low moods or depressed moods alternating with episodes of very elevated or high agitated, high energy moods.
The mania.
And the mania or hypomania. And those would be things like racing thoughts, increased activities, decreased need for sleep, being distractible and
being an extrovert,
being more talkative than usual, or engaging in high-risk behaviors. So sometimes the depression phase of that appears first, and it would take only time for the bipolar disorder to really declare itself.
Dr. Noonan, I think you have a very, very unique perspective on a lot of different things. Number one, the fact that you've written, this is your second book, I believe?
It's actually my third book.
Third book, yes. And we'll get to the second and third title momentarily. But I think your perspective is unique because, number one, you're a clinician with an expertise, and also an expertise that you also have struggled and or possibly experience depression still to this day. So not only are you medically trained, but you walk the walk.
That's true. Yes, I wear 2 hats. I have experience as both a provider and a recipient of mental health services.
So I think that gives you a very unique perception, I should say, because you know what it's like. It's interesting to sit in a chair and to understand and do all the research and be aware of all the latest articles, et cetera. But to understand how somebody actually feels when they are feeling depressed for a short period, a long period, is, you know, nothing to sneeze at, because, I mean, the empathy that you can give alone is tremendous.
That's true. I do know what it's like, and I do know what works and what's possible. And that gives some hope to people.
Now, you like to give your answers in a straightforward way, and that's what's a great thing about this book, that it's not long, winded responses, but it's practical responses. Number one, I would say the stigma has changed, I think, in a more positive way in the last 5 to 7 years. And also, I should point out to you that I had suffered from depression. My brother, unfortunately, took his life 25 years ago. But my thing is more general anxiety with a sprinkle of depression. But so I have a great deal of experience as well. So with that said, do you feel that societal perspective has changed more towards the positive in terms of awareness about mental health?
It has changed, yes. Over the past 20 or 30 years, we're becoming more understanding of it as we become educated about it. And the younger generations, those in their teens and 20s, are becoming more comfortable with talking about it.
It's more the norm.
Whereas the older generation still feel more uncomfortable. They fear bringing it up amongst their neighbors or their friends or family or their employers because they fear being judged unfairly, which had happened in the past.
Well, I think that's important because we touch on the fact that we're social media and when technology can play and can possibly hamper depression. But on the upside, that people are talking about it, even just yesterday for Mental Health Awareness Day, I had 3 or 4 people on my feed outwardly for the first time talk about their diagnosis. And I thought that was gargantuan for them and for also people, whether they know them or not, to understand, wow, yes, there are people within our confines of circles that experience depression.
That's true. Talking about it, sharing one's experiences, and having people understand it's not something to be feared and that it is treatable, that you can still have a life that is enjoyable and satisfying to you is a really important message to get out there.
Absolutely. And for the people who fortunately have not experienced depression, describe some of the real feeling, not so much the warning signs, but like the muddled thoughts, the lack of concentration, things of that modality. Can you explain those, please?
It's really hard to for somebody who hasn't had it to envision it, but it's like the world has come down over you and you're walking in this gray, murky bottom of this pond where you can't see through it. It's like heavy molasses on top of your body, and you're moving slowly, mm-hmm. and you're thinking slowly, and you're not interested in doing anything that you used to do or that used to bring you pleasure. It's just not enjoyable anymore. You've got a decrease in appetite. You probably have trouble sleeping. You're not interested in engaging with your friends or family members anymore. And so you tend to isolate and just curl up and do the minimal amount that you need to do. Sometimes it's unintentional weight loss or weight gain, so then you feel bad about yourself. There's just loss of energy. You can't think or concentrate or focus very well, so it's hard to read a book or even the newspaper article or watch a sitcom on TV because you can't follow
sure.
the plot.
Sure, absolutely, yeah.
And then there's just really bad feelings about yourself.
You're
worthless or hopeless. And some people feel have suicidal thoughts. So it's really all-encompassing, both physical and mental and emotional.
And I think you hit on a lot of very important, vital aspects of it. And I think the overall umbrella is it just affects the core of who you are.
You forget what you were like beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, that's the key thing. And that it's important to try and keep in touch with that because you forget the essence of what you were like, that you had a sense of humor, that you had things that you could contribute to the world. And you think that you're, you know, scum of the world. You know, that's what a lot of people just, they tend to believe that, and myself included, when you're at the depths of an episode of depression.
Dr. Susan Noonan is my guest. She has written Take Control of Your Depression, a brand new book. My name is Mark Crowell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. What are some of the health maintenance basics one should be aware of?
Well, the basics are very similar to the basics of health in general. You should take any medications that are prescribed, and not everybody needs medications, but, you know, just follow along with that. But keep up with a sound sleep pattern 7 days a week. There's no such thing as catching up on sleep on the weekends. Have a very balanced and healthy, nutritious diet, and try to avoid junk foods or skipping meals. Daily physical exercise is actually very important for your brain,
yeah.
as well as for your body.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping a routine and structure to your day is very important because endless hours of empty alone time are just not healthy for anybody, whether you're depressed or not. And avoiding isolation, keeping up with your regular social contacts with friends and family members. That's not just by texting, but actually in person, face-to-face, one-on-one communication is preferable. Then it's really important to try and avoid alcohol, street drugs, limit the amount of caffeine and tobacco that you have, because none of those things are good for your brain.
You mentioned a lot of interesting things, but I want to talk about intrusive thoughts. I was having just a boatload of those years ago when my depression was laying, descending upon me, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And intrusive thoughts, I never knew what they were. I never had them before. But it's something that a lot of the population is not aware of, and they basically don't make sense. And from what I understand, a lot of science to still not understand how and why intrusive thoughts begin.
Well, I don't know if I have the exact answer to why they begin, but they're very common with depression. And the person believes them, truly. They tend to be very negative and very distorted, and they very much cloud your judgment and chip away at the way you feel about yourself. But the way to deal with those is to challenge any facts. Look carefully at the facts. Challenge anything that's inaccurate. Replace those negative thoughts and distorted thoughts with something that's more accurate, which in turn will affect overall how you feel.
And a lot of times those intrusive thoughts can be really absurd. So when you think
that's
about it,
true.
Yeah, they don't make any sense.
True.
And for myself, that have had a lot to do with it. And I was just like, what am I losing my mind? And then, of course, once I spoke to a professional, I realized this is something that's very, very common, as you mentioned. Talk about, there's a lot of drugs on the market nowadays that have kind of like a new breed, the SSRIs. And there's another category that's SSRN. What's the category called?
I don't, in my books and in my professional practice, prescribe a lot of medications. That's really not in my area of expertise. So it's probably not helpful for us to get too much into a discussion of medications on our show today.
Sure, sure. But I will say, though, that I think drugs are getting better to the point where there's less side effects.
Yes, that's very true.
Less nuanced. It is a trial and error situation, just like they were, 20 years ago, whatever works for your physiology. But it's great to know that there are certain answers out there and available for people to try because, I can't say medication saved my life, but it certainly helped me to be Mark Farrell again.
Yes, that's true. It's always helpful to begin with talk therapy and to continue that along. But some individuals do need medications, and medications are unique to each individual. There are many different types of medications that are available. Some work better for one person than for another, depending upon a number of different things, the type of depression that you have, the issues that you have. And they're targeted and they're focused with different side effects as to the medications, as you mentioned, which is good. They're trying to improve upon them and enhance the effectiveness of them. And they're still working on that.
Sure.
They're still working continuously on developing new medications that come along, and they're looking at different uses for medications that are out there, sort of off-label uses of medications that can be effective in some individuals. They're also looking at non-medication treatments for depression. We've had ECT or electroconvulsive therapy for several decades, and that's always been effective. But now there's something called transcranial magnetic stimulation, which has been effective in some people. So there's always something. One should not just give up hope that there's no treatment for their particular set of problems.
Doctor, what is ketamine?
That's used to be considered a street drug. It came on as a an anesthetic medication, but now we've learned that it has been, in certain individuals, it has been effective as an antidepressant use. Again, an off-label, because it was initially developed for another purpose. It needs to be given under controlled circumstances, sometimes by intravenous, and now there's a new way to give it that's a nasal spray. Not everybody is a candidate for that. It does have some side effects, so it needs to be carefully screened, but in some individuals it has been shown to be effective.
Is that for someone possibly who's a little bit drug resistant, if there's such a thing?
Yes.
Wow, it's phenomenal. it's just amazing how all these things can affect different physiologies in different ways. Doctor,
it's fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the human body itself, when I do different talks, I talk about how we have obvious differences with people, whether it's hair, color, you know, cultural, et cetera, and not so obvious. When you think about even just the blood type, I mean, it's just amazing how the human body is wired and constructed.
Very much so, yes. And now they're learning about the genetic component of it and how that factors in. And the hopes are that that may help to guide us with more targeted and specific treatments down the road. It's certainly premature right now, but in due time, that may help us to determine the best treatment for people.
So I have mental health in my family, so I'm predisposed. How common is it for a family who is not predisposed to experience depression?
Well, it is common. We are thinking, however, though, depression comes about as a result of a genetic predisposition, which makes a person vulnerable, combined with a stressor that occurs in their life. And a stressor can be positive or negative. It can be something like a major loss, such as a loss of a job, a loss of a loved one. It could be the move to a new home. It could be something positive, like a marriage or the birth of a new baby. And all those cause a certain amount of stress. And we're able at different times in our lives to cope with those stressors, but it requires the perfect storm, the combination of somebody who's vulnerable along with a particular stressor in their life to come together, and an episode of depression then follows. And that's the current thinking as far as, you know, how depression develops. Now, that genetic vulnerability may or may not run in your family.
Mm.
Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't.
Now, we mentioned technology a few minutes before, but you had written in your book that, or can technology, rather, the question is, and social media actually help with depression?
Yes, and that's fairly new, but there are some applications that might be useful. The most familiar ones we know about are the fitness apps.
Trackers.
That we all use, such as a Fitbit or our smartphones, just to help us, you know, monitor and record our aerobic and strength training activities, which are important, one of the basics that we just talked about a few minutes ago. But there are also some helpful apps to help with our nutrition needs that help to keep our brains well-nourished. And now there are being developed some computerized programs that offer some monitoring and education and even some remote psychotherapy that would be similar to a Skype program that would be for depression and bipolar disorder. And you can also have some self-monitoring on a mobile phone app that might help you to stick with your treatment, using some monitoring and reminders and tips and information. And on the internet, you can also log on to some chat rooms and blogs that might give you some feeling of online peer support. All of those get pretty complicated, and you might not know which ones are the good ones and which ones to use. So there's a website out there called cyberguide.org. cyberguide.org, which helps you sort through all of the different mental health apps to then determine what the best ones are for your interests and needs. It kind of is a rating system and describes what they are and which ones are stronger in a particular area, and then you can decide which ones are best suited to your needs.
That's great advice. That's PSYBERguide.org.
Yes. Yes, correct.
I love it. And of course, buyer beware. Of course, never take anything.
Yes, of course.
with, you know, it is online. We all think we're doctors when we Google things and go on WebMD, but that's not the case. Leave it to a professional. And doctor, we don't have too much time, but since you are a clinician and since you also are, unfortunately, a sufferer from time to time, I imagine, can you tell me about a good day and a bad day in your life?
Well, a good day is when I don't have to think about this too much. I go through my routine with following the basics. I get up. I do my physical exercises, you know, get out for a good walk, aerobic walk, or go to the gym, things like that, meet up with friends, get something constructive done at work. Maybe it's a nice day out as far as weather goes. I get something that's considered satisfaction and enjoyment out of my day. And whatever ups and downs that occur in the course of that day, I can deal with those and I can manage those. Because we all have ups and downs. There's no day that's, you know, perfectly smooth and perfect. It just...
Oh, yeah.
you know, everybody has that. You know, my worst day is... You know, a clouded, murky day when I don't think very highly of myself and I have trouble problem solving, perhaps, and things don't seem to go well, and I feel gloomy and perhaps I don't feel particularly hopeful about the outcome of something that I'm doing or the next steps that I need to take.
But you have a skill set that you know how to reel yourself in.
I do. I do, and my challenge is to use those skills. Well, you don't necessarily always want to. You have to make yourself do that. And I have a great little mantra that I've learned, which is action precedes motivation.
Love it.
You can't wait until you want to do something. Just go ahead and do it, and eventually the motivation will follow, and you'll find the interest in doing it. And that applies to a lot of things, whether it's getting out to go for a workout or in any other area of your life.
Well said, doctor. And we're going to have to leave it there. Take control of your depression, strategies to help you feel better now on Johns Hopkins Press. Dr. Susan Noonan, thank you very much for your insights and a really good, useful, everyday practical guide to keep depression, to stave off depression and or just to manage it.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
All the best to you. And thanks for your candor. It really goes a long way because for certain positions and industries, it's a challenge and a dare and a risk to actually say that you experience mental illness. And for you to, as a clinician, you know, clinicians obviously struggle with this, just like first responders, police officers, and sometimes they're worried about the backlash. And I'm glad that you have put your name and your mantra and your life out there for us to prosper from.
Thank you so much.
All the best, doctor. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. Love to hear your input. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. 32 minutes after the hour in New York City. And there's a great movie that's in the works. It's called Feeling Through. No, it's not X-rated. It's not a porn. Rather, it's a great movie about a chance encounter by my guest, Doug Rowan. Doug Rowan is a writer, producer, director, and he is producing this movie and directing it. Actually, we'll find out exactly what he's doing of Feeling Through. Welcome to the show, Doug.
Thanks, Mark. I'm happy to be here.
Is it a little bit cooler and manageable out on the West Coast?
You know, it's cooled down a lot, actually. I'm actually wearing a sweatshirt right now, believe it or not.
Oh, well, we are wearing far from sweatshirts because it feels like we're living in Miami here. It's a million degrees and the humidity is so thick you can cut it with a knife. So you are a native New Yorker.
That is correct. I'm very familiar with that type of humidity.
So what street were you standing on when you had a chance encounter with a deafblind individual, a random New Yorker? And take us through that story, please.
Yeah, absolutely. This was almost exactly 7 years ago. I was coming home quite late at night. It was about 4 a.m. I'd been out with some friends and I was in the East Village and the street corner was 4th Street and Avenue A. And it was very late out, so it was very empty on the streets. But there was one man standing by himself on the street and, you know, didn't really think much about it. But as I passed him, I saw the light changed and he didn't move. And I was like, oh, okay. And as I got closer, I saw that he was holding a sign that said, "I'm deaf and blind and need help crossing the street." And that's kind of, that was the start of our experience. I tapped him. I quickly realized, you know, I tried to talk to him and I'm like, oh, he can't hear me. And I tried to, you know, motion and gesticulate and realize he couldn't see me, and quickly realized I'd never encountered a deafblind person before and didn't really know how to communicate. And, you know, over the course of the next hour, because he had a notepad that he was writing questions or directions to me in, and he needed to get to a bus that, you know, when I walked in there, realized, you know, it's New York at 4 a.m, and if you just missed the bus isn't coming for a while.
Oh, yeah.
So I realized I needed to figure out how to communicate to him that a bus wasn't coming for over an hour and that I was going to stay and wait with him. And that's when I figured out to start drawing letters on the palm of his hand. So basically what happened from there is we had a whole conversation that way. I drew a letter, you know, I wrote to him on the palm of his hand, and he'd write back in a notepad. And, you know, what at first became a memorable experience because I was encountering the first deafblind person in my life quickly became much more about connecting with this really just amazing person who was a really open-hearted, genuine, interesting person who I had a really great connection with. And that was really the impetus for the story.
Absolutely. Absolutely phenomenal, Doug. I really applaud you for your work. And the first thing I would say that many jaded New Yorkers would consider or think in their mind would be like, oh, look at this scammer. You know?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because I think New Yorkers unfairly get a bad rap. New Yorkers, more than any place I've ever lived, and I know I'm a little biased here, but go out of their way to help people.
They do. We do.
We really do, because New Yorkers, like, yes, we're, you know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of things going on, we're, you know, we're fast-paced and we're moving on, but when someone really needs help, I don't think there's any place else where people stop more to really go investigate. You know, people, New Yorkers go out of their way, too. They're a little nosy in a good way when someone needs help, because they'll, like, see someone who needs help who's not necessarily feeling comfortable asking that and just go out of their way and go, like, you look like you need help. Can I give you a hand? So, like, New Yorkers are good about that.
So this interaction, Doug, lasted for an hour or more. And when did the light bulb moment go off? When did it happen for you for a movie?
Like, okay, yeah. You know, for me, and this is just kind of how I work, like, you know, things kind of just, I'm never, like, going out in my life and, like looking through the lens of, like, what's my next story. It's more just, like, after the fact when I, like, have a time to sit down and, you know, start kind of, like, free writing or just figuring out what the next thing is, things start to come to me. But in this sense, the next morning, I wrote a short story about it because I knew it was just something that was really still, I was still buzzing about it because it was such a, it was such a meaningful experience for me. Again, mainly because he was just a really, like genuine and amazing person to make a connection with. Aside from the fact that it was significant that he was the first deafblind person I'd ever met, and this is a lot of what the story, you know, the intention of what we're doing is, because, you know, since I've been working on this film for a number of months now, and I've mentioned to a lot of people, a lot of very intelligent, conscientious, good-hearted people. It has nothing to do with that. They just go, oh, wow, deafblind. I've never really thought about that because it's something that's not in the media. It's not something that you don't encounter. Most people don't encounter a deafblind person in the course of their life. And so what's really important about this, too, is that, yes, for a lot of people, this will be the first time they will be. We are casting a deafblind actor in this film, and this will be the first time they're actually getting a chance to be exposed to what I've come to know as an amazing community. And again, people, just like anyone else. But exposure is important because, you know, certain people don't become people like anyone else until someone gets a chance to actually encounter.
Absolutely. And I think
that's a really basic thing, but it's important.
Yes, correct. And I think that phrase deafblind usually gets applied to one person, Helen Keller. No one else in the world is deafblind. Just Helen Keller was deafblind, not the person next door or down the block. So I think it's important to shine a spotlight on the person who, you know, could possibly be standing next to you on a New York City street corner. By chance, have you connected with this gentleman, or was it just a chance meeting and you don't know where he lives or where he's at?
So that's a great question, because when I finally connected with the Helen Keller National Center, who we're working with to make this film and also cast our deafblind actor, and they're amazing. They're just amazing people. I just want
great organization.
literally some of the greatest people I've ever met. They're just lovely, amazing people. But they, when I first told them this story, they're like, wait a second, this happened in New York and he was holding that sign? That sounds like one of our signs. I bet we know this guy. And they're like, you know, give me, they're like, give us as much information as you have. I bet
we'll track him down.
And, you know, I had this short story that I'd written the day after, so I extracted all the details I could from that, sent it over. Within hours, they got back, and they're like, we know who it is.
It's Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they know who he is. The only catch here is that he moved out of New York and has kind of fallen out of the circle or their system as far
the
as
services.
So they haven't been able to get through to him, and I'm hoping, you know, as this thing grows that, you know, it'll reach Artemio. So that we'll be able to reunite and have a nice little chat about how 7 years ago he made a really big impression on me.
In a city of over 10 million people in the daytime, they tracked one person down who's deafblind. That's incredible.
Yeah it was wow. Really, like, it was an amazing. Yeah, I was really happy.
Wow.
To hear that.
The far-reaching tentacles of Helen Keller National cease to amaze me.
Yeah, they're really amazing.
So, yeah, talk about Helen Keller National, because obviously you're partnering with them, and they're going to be, we're going to talk about some discussion panels, et cetera, but how did that relationship form?
Yeah, sure. So, I, you know, this experience happened 7 years ago. I wrote a short story the next day. I didn't write a script until about a year later, but I put it aside for a number of years because there was a couple other things I was working on, and I just knew I needed a lot of resources to do this. And I was like, I'm going to come back to this when I'm ready. And it just so happened that January of this year, you know, I actually just put aside a project that I've been working on for a while that just wasn't happening. I was literally cleaning up the desktop of my computer because it gets pretty messy a lot of times. And I came across this story that I hadn't looked at in a couple years. And I read it and immediately was like, I'm like, I'm making this right now. And, you know,
re-inspired.
I'm not exaggerating. Like, I just Googled deafblind organization, called the first number that popped up. Before I even knew what I was going to say, someone picks up the phone and I'm like, I'm not sure why I'm calling you, but I have a story to tell you and maybe it'll be clear after. This turned out to be a man at Deafblind Children's Services in the Bay Area. And at the end of me telling the story and the film I wanted to make, I said, you know, on the spot, I hadn't even thought about this yet. I'm like, I think I want to cast a deafblind actor. Like, is that crazy? Because at the time, I'd only met one deafblind person. I didn't know. I didn't know what the logistics would be like. I had only one frame of reference. And he goes, no, I don't think so at all. You should call the Helen Keller National Center. So my next call was to the Helen Keller National Center. And I want to give a particular shout-out to Sue Rosinski, the executive director there, who I ended up meeting up with her a couple months later. Along with a couple other people from the National Center, and they were just really taken by this story, and that's how our partnership and our working relationship took off.
Was there a casting call actually held there?
Yes. So we have actually had a couple casting calls for our deafblind actor, including
Fantastic.
One yesterday in L.A. We had one in up at the center in Long Island a few weeks ago, and we have our final callbacks for our actor on this coming Monday at the Helen Keller National Center in Long Island.
What was your experience before you obviously were re-inspired with this film with persons with disabilities? Anyone in your life, any connections in your concentric circles?
See, that's the really interesting thing, Mark. I really don't have anyone really close to my life in the disability community. Like I have friends with family members who I'm close with, but no one like really in my immediate life. And that's what's been a really interesting experience. And I would I've been gifted this experience that's led to all these amazing relationships. And for me, it's just about, you know, what it comes down to and what the story is about ultimately, because this is a good place to make a connection here. The film Feeling Through is a coming of age story about a teen in a really difficult situation who has a chance, because it's obviously based on my story, but it's fictional. It's not me. It's just inspired by that incident. And he has this chance encounter with this deafblind man who he initially needs to help, but, you know, ends up forming this really genuine connection with. And through the power of this connection, you know, and this teen who doesn't really have anyone else in his life to really connect with, it opens him up and empowers him to move forward with the challenges ahead of him and deal with them in a better way. And really, at the end of the day, it's about human connection. And one of the characters happens to be deafblind. So the connection I'm trying to make to answer your question is, I might have initially gone like, who am I to be any voice in the deafblind community? And mind you, I'm not trying to say I'm like a voice in the sense of like anyone beyond someone who has had been gifted this experience,
sure,
given me relationships, and has really given me a deep connection to the work that the Helen Keller National Center is doing, and really wanting to honor that in the best way possible with this film. But all that is to say that one doesn't need to have a brother or a mother or a best friend or what have you, you know, to really empathize with and understand and want to help promote awareness about a disability group or in this case the deafblind community. Because at the end of the day, like we're getting at, is once that exposure and awareness is there, you realize we're all people. And I know it sounds like a really simple basic statement.
Oh, absolutely, we're people first.
Simple basic statement that's like really profound and powerful one. And it's like that's really what it comes down to. It's about all of us being aware of each other. So it's just like we all understand and embrace one another regardless of who we are or where we're from or what have you.
And you have a history and interest of focusing on the overlooked and underrepresented population. So this fits part and parcel for that.
That is true.
So do you notice in television ads, in media online, social media, digital media, et cetera, the more presence of persons with disabilities now that you're like full thrust in the movie feeling through?
Well, you know, I will say I certainly have engaged with on social media a lot more groups. So that's kind of where I'm seeing a lot more. And that's a little bit more by choice because
sure.
of
where you are
to follow them. Mm. But that's kind of where I've been much more immersed into a lot of different communities where I spent a lot of my time connecting with, you know, different organizations throughout the country who have been really supportive of what we're doing. I haven't had a lot of time to watch a lot of TV.
Well, you know what?
Lately.
The reason why I bring that up, Doug, is because it is changing. Even for the new Nike commercial with Colin Kaepernick, I mean, there is a woman who's actually coming on the show who's in a chair. I mean, it's becoming mainstream media, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure you know better than I that it's well overdue and
long.
You know, the changes. You know, we've obviously, you know, particularly in media, have had a lot of a lot of challenges around, or a lot of a lot of conversation around the need for inclusion in all different capacities for quite a while now, and you know, it's taken some struggle and some pushes to get there. But of course, like you said, we are starting to see some changes, and we're hoping that, you know, with our film and with a lot of other films being made out there, that's going to just add to, you know, what the change that's already starting to happen.
So with all the challenges you have as a writer, director, and producer, as an independent filmmaker, your biggest challenge right now is not even finding the lead character. It's fundraising, your fiscal need for $67,000 to make this film.
Right.
Talk about that, please.
Well, yeah, well, you know, Mark, I'm glad we're having this conversation today because I can say it pretty plainly. We are in the final 24 hours of our fundraising campaign. And again, with the Helen Keller National Center as our fiscal sponsor, it is a charitable, tax-deductible donation to this film. You can find all the information at feelingthrough.com. And basically where it's at is, it's pretty simple. Yes, we have a goal of $67,000, and we are not just making the film, we're also making a documentary following our deafblind actor's journey through the making of that film to give a whole nother dimension to this experience. And we'll be screening both of those films all across the country.
Which is genius. I love that concept.
And because we really, look, these things are going to go online, and they're going to go viral, and people are going to watch them. We also wanted to really gather people in a physical space alongside people from the deafblind community. So after they watch these films, they can have a talk back and really actually speak directly to people from the community and ask questions. But I want to just say, that's all to say that we have 24 hours to hit 80% of our goal. At this point, we'd love to hit the 67,000, but we're at this very moment with another donation coming in, we're going to be about $10,000 away. So we have $10,000 to raise in 24 hours. So if you're listening to this, go to feelingthrough.com. It's a tax-deductible donation to bring literally the first of its kind. This is the first time ever that a deafblind actor is a lead in a film. It is literally a film in history in the making, but we need your help. So if you're listening, I know it's a little bit of an effort, but even if you just go on there and make a $5 donation, I'm sure with all your lovely listeners, Mark, if all of them went on right now and made a $5 donation, I'm sure we'd be good. So,
well, they're not all lovely. I'm sure they're not all lovely, but that's okay. The point taken. But yes, and everyone at Helen Keller National and Helen Keller Services are over the moon with your passion and zeal and fortitude to make such a monumental film that, you know, could really have a gargantuan impact on all communities.
Yeah, and they I got to say, the Helen Keller National, this would not be possible without Helen Keller Services / Helen Keller National Center. They are an amazing, just an amazing organization with first and foremost because of the amazing people that work there, and they've supported us in so many ways and are so behind this project and are really the ones like, and again, I want to make, you know, I'm not deafblind myself. I didn't grow up around anyone who's deafblind. And this has been a real education for me too. You know, I'm still learning every single day, and I'm learning from not just the people at Helen Keller National Center, but a lot of people in the deafblind community beyond, just by engaging, communicating with people, asking them why this project is important to them, and learning ways in which we can fine tune it to make it something that's the most authentic and something that will promote awareness in the best way possible, while at the same time just trying to make the best story possible.
Doug Rowland, my apologies.
Yeah, sure.
Keep going. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying. At the end of the day, we're also we want to make a great story that people can really resonate with.
And you are. Doug Rowan, what's the biggest misconception you've experienced so far in making Feeling Through?
Yes. Are you saying about the deafblind community? Is that the question around?
Well, it's up for you to grab.
Yeah, sure. I'd like to go. That's how I interpret that question, at least this is what came to mind. And I think the biggest thing, and I know this is a huge mission for the National Center. I know Chris Woodfill there, who's the associate executive director. This is his main passion. But it's the misconception that deafblind people aren't capable of really working or doing any number of jobs. And that's just not true. I mean, it's, you know, deafblind people have the capacity to do all types of jobs. And that's, you know, the unemployment rate in that community is astronomically high, not because of a lack of capability, but a lack of belief among our understanding, really.
Or a lack of desire, that's for sure.
The deafblind community is able to do various work, and that's something that's just not true, and we're hoping that, you know, the awareness that we put out there by including a deafblind actor in our film and also making a documentary will dispel that.
Now, the script or the premise is based on certainly Artemio, the character, the person you actually met on the street, and he was homeless, correct?
No, he was not.
He was not.
He was headed home. I think he just had I don't know where he was coming from. We didn't get to that part of the conversation, but it seemed like he was in good spirits, and maybe he just had a nice time with a friend of his, and he was just on his way home. He just needed help. He knew once he got on the bus, he knew how to get home from the bus stop. He just needed help getting to
the bus
stop.
Now, I'm sorry, maybe I'm misdirected here, but in Feeling Through, is the main character homeless?
This is a distinction. He is described as a teen without a home, and
I see
the reason, and I'm not to split hairs here, but and something that once we make the film be evident, he's not homeless. He's not living on the streets. In this particular night that we drop into, he does not want to go home, and we don't really go into all the allude to things. But we don't really go into all the details about that. But he's a teen, like many teens, who's just dealing with a lot of issues. A lot of, you know, home life issues that he can't really go back to. And at the night that we meet him, he doesn't know where he's going to stay. And that's why he's out late at night and encounters this man initially.
The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm your host, Mark Farrell. Doug Rowan is my guest. He's writer, producer, and director. His new movie that's in the works is called Feeling Through, and we need your donation. We need $67,000. We're about 10K short. Log on to feelingthrough.com, feelingthrough.com. Doug has done some great work. His short film, Jada, played in over 24 festivals around the world before becoming a viral sensation with more than 15 million views on YouTube. Doug produced a feature film, Life Hack, which has racked up 16 awards on the festival circuit, including Best Independent Feature at the Cleveland International Film Festival. Some great accolades under your belt there, Doug. With the cast and crew, how many people have worked or know people, any experience with persons with disabilities? And also, now that you're taking ASL classes, I guess you can count yourself as one.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. You know, we're still putting together some of a good amount of the crew. One of the consulting producers on this project has a disability, and that's something that, you know, part of the core team is directly, you know, connected to that community. And beyond that, as we fill in the team, that's something that I'll have a better answer for you later. Yeah, that's kind of where we're at this moment.
Now, watching some of your previous work, and we're going to actually go to the not so much a trailer right now, but if you went on feelingthrough.com, this is what you're going to see. And this is a kind of a prelude to what Feeling Through looks like. And also, if you're near a computer, you can log on to Facebook, and we are live, and you can watch the video as it plays right now.
That is correct.
Seven years ago tonight, I came across a man standing on this corner holding a sign that read, "I'm deaf and blind. Please help me cross the street." I walked over and offered to help, speaking loudly, gesturing clumsily, before I realized I don't actually know how to communicate with him. Artemio was the first deaf-blind person I'd ever met, and over the next hour, we got to know each other sitting waiting for his bus. He'd write in this notebook, and I'd respond by tracing letters on the palm of his hand. When Artemio's bus finally arrived, he embraced me with such an open heart, I felt like I was saying goodbye to a dear friend. This experience taught me that vulnerability can serve to empower and inspire genuine connection.
Feeling Through follows the story of Tariq, a kind but guarded teen wandering the streets of New York, desperate for a place to crash, and his encounter with Artie, a deaf-blind man in need of help getting home. What begins as an awkward meeting between strangers becomes an intimate bond between friends. It takes someone who can neither see nor hear Tariq to really know him, and in turn, inspire him to realize his own sense of purpose. A call to the Helen Keller National Center 8 months ago started a conversation. A conversation that has given me the opportunity to learn more about the work that they're doing as well as the community they serve. And now, that conversation has grown into a partnership that allows us to tell this story with the authenticity it deserves.
We will cast a deafblind actor in the role of Artie, the first time a deafblind actor will be featured as a lead in a film.
We will also shoot a documentary following the journey of that actor and the unique process of bringing that story to life.
And across the country, we will host screenings of both films alongside a panel of members from the deafblind community.
My last film, Jada, has over 15 million views. We hope Feeling Through can have an even greater impact, promoting awareness and inspiring people to engage locally.
So, this is where you come in. We need to cover the cost of two production crews, as well as interpreters, accommodations, and extra shooting days to support the needs of our actor playing Artie.
All donations are tax deductible. And we put together some awesome incentives, such as our production team matching donations with volunteer hours at deafblind organizations.
Please follow our Seed and Spark page. This actually helps us a ton, as well as our social media, where we're going to be posting updates and footage along the way. And please share this page. Every donation and every share goes a long way.
We are so excited to tell this story, and thank you so much for your support.
Very apropos that you open and close that on the streets, because obviously this is where the whole premise and experience took place. And I have to say, your work is always very visually stimulating, very well shot.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that, Mark.
So there's a lot of exciting parts of this project. There's a lot of moving parts. The fact that you're, number one, are shooting a movie within a movie, a documentary about the movie. You're going to have the panel discussions across country. But none of this can happen unless we raise enough money. Please log on to feelingthrough.com. That's feeling, T-H-R-O-U-G-H.com. Well, Doug, we really appreciate your time and interest in making an impact, positive impact, on the disabled community, more importantly, the deaf-blind community.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that. Just in closing, if I could say, first and foremost, thank you so much for having me on. And again, if you're listening, today's the last day to donate. Please go to feelingthrough.com, and I promise you, you'll be supporting
the
industry in a way that will.
Thank you, Doug. Have a great day. My pleasure. My name is Mark Farrell. The show is Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, or corporation, it's markfarrellmotivation.com. Gary Knowles next.